Soundlessly, he slid from the saddle. And even before his feet touched the sand of the trail, his guns were in his hands. Tensely, he ran forward, staying in the soft sand where his feet made no noise. Suddenly, dead ahead of him and just around a huge boulder, a pistol roared. He jerked to a halt, then eased around the rock. A black figure of a man was crouched in the road up ahead. Just as the man started to move, the rifle up on the side of the canyon wall crashed again, and the figure in the road spilled over on its face. Perry's gun roared at the flash of the rifle, and roared again as a bullet whipped by his ear. The rifle fired once more, and Perry felt his hat jerk on his head. He ducked and held still. There was no further gunfire from up above. Cautiously, Perry lifted his head, then began to inch toward the dark figure sprawled in the road before him. A match flared suddenly up on the slope, and Perry started to shoot, but again he held his fire. The man might think him dead, and his present position was too open to take a chance. Then he heard the sound of hooves and rocks and loose dirt tumbling down the steep hillside, and he knew the marksman was leaving. As he reached the body, the sound of hooves was disappearing rapidly in the distance, headed towards town. Perry's lips set grimly. Looking around, he holstered his two guns. Then he turned the body over. His eyes were already accustomed to the dim moonlight, but still he could hardly see the man's face. He gently brushed a forelock of damp hair aside with the back of his hand.
Why, it's just a kid.
It was a boy, an attractive, fair-haired youngster. He had been shot twice, once in the body and once through the head. Perry started to rise.
Hold it! One move and I'll shoot!
Perry froze, then lifted his head ever so slowly until he saw, first, a pair of slender boots, then a long riding skirt, and finally, her face. The woman was standing at the side of the road with a pistol aimed at his belt line. Even in this light, Perry could see that she was lovely. He held perfectly still, riveted in place as much by her beauty as by the gun she held so steadily.
You murderer. Stand up and keep your hands high.
He stood up slowly.
I'm afraid you're mistaken, miss. I didn't kill this boy.
Don't make yourself a liar as well as a killer. Didn't I just hear you shooting? Haven't I got eyes?
While you're holding me here, the real killer is making his getaway. Now, if you'll put down that gun, I'll explain.
Explain? After you killed my brother?
Your brother? Why, I didn't.
You didn't know, I suppose you're going to say. You didn't know what? That Wade Manning had a sister? Would that have made any difference to you? I don't believe it.
Wade Manning? Why, this isn't Wade Manning. Come on over here and take a look.
Not Wade? But who is it, then?
Take a look, Miss Manning. I don't know many people around here. I met your brother today at the Indian Creek diggings. He's a sight older than this poor youngster.
She dropped to her knees beside the boy. Then she looked up.
Why, this is young Tommy McCarty. What can he be doing out here tonight?
Any relation to Buff McCarty?
His son. Oh, this is awful. We came over the trail from Salt Lake together, his folks and mine.
Listen, Miss Manning, I don't like to butt in, you knowing the lad and all, but your brother came out to see me today, along with Doc Greenlee and Buff McCarty. They offered me the job of marshal down in Basin City, and I took it. So I guess my work starts right here.
Then you're Clip Haynes.
Who told you that?
My brother. Wade. The other men don't know, but he figured it out somehow.
I see.
Wade still wanted you to be marshal, but he wanted to talk to you. He rode out here tonight to try and meet you before you got into town.
Well, come on. I guess we'd better get on in.
Frowning thoughtfully, he caught up the boy's horse, grazing nearby, and lashed the body to the saddle. Then he walked back to where he had left the black. When he returned, Ruth Manning was sitting astride a little pinto.
Let's go. Yep.
Silently, they took the trail for Basin City. Except for the lights in Rafe Landon's sluice box bar and Doc Greenlee's high-stake palace saloon, the main street of town was in darkness when they arrived. But even before they had reined in at the hitching rail of the high stake, their arrival had been noticed. And as they swung down, a crowd was already gathering.